Hello and welcome to another episode of the Heart of the Hulk podcast, brought to you in association with our partners Fansbet. My name's Ryan Pitcher, and today Tom Hendry joins me in discussion, where we'll be going over the Bournemouth defeat and looking ahead to Everton, as well as answering some of your questions. I guess we should probably get into it. Okay, thank you, Tom. Thanks for joining us again for another episode of the Heart of the Hulk podcast. Now, where best to start than going over the Bournemouth defeat, of course. I was speaking to a few Cherries fans on the way back down south as I live down here. Funnily enough, I was actually on the train back to Bournemouth, of all places, and they commented to me that what with the raucous atmosphere before kickoff and as the players came out, that an early goal would really, you know, upset the apple cart and silence the Villa faithful. And lo and behold, we go and give a penalty away in the first, 45 seconds and gift the second goal inside of a quarter of an hour. And that really did just took the edge of the atmosphere and it went a bit silent. It goes without saying that it did dampen things inside of Villa Park. What did you make of yesterday, Tom?
No, it was a shame to go down straight away because I was really looking forward to coming to the game. And I was looking forward to it and I was still enjoying it, even though we were 1-0 down, because the atmosphere was still loud and, you know, there was 40,000 other fans who was looking forward to the game. And I just believe it was a real shame to start the game off with, you know, a dreadful decision, you know, made from Tom Heaton. And I really don't know what was going through his head, because the ball went through Engels, you know, past Engels, and Engels should have looked over his shoulder. That was the one mistake Engels made yesterday. He should have looked over his shoulder and saw Callum Wilson there, because Callum Wilson is an England international and he will be in a typical striker position in between the two centre-backs or between the centre-back and the full-back. And it was a perfect position for him. But he didn't look and the ball went straight through to him and Tom Heaton just kicks out. He could have picked it up. He could have gone to the floor. He could have left him. He was going away from goal. It was a real shame to start off within the first minute, but it was a great penalty. Even if Tom Heaton went the right way, it was no way he was going to save that penalty, because it was a fantastic penalty from Josh King. But then from then on, we looked so shaky at the back. You know, you compare it to last week where we had Mings getting in team of the week because of his defence. You know, his defensive abilities. And this week, in the first 25 minutes, we looked so shaky. And that, you know, that it prevailed after the first 15 minutes because, you know, Trezeguet picked up the ball. McGinn was hiding behind his defender and he should have moved. But, you know, Trezeguet could have easily cleared it, got rid of it. But he decided to make the schoolboy error and go inwards. And you never go, you never pass across your box. But, you know, you don't pass across your box. But he did it because there was someone there. But it was a crowded area. But Douglas Luiz decided to put it through his legs. I don't know why. And I think the other 40,000 fans really didn't believe why he did it. But it was a great shot. But if it wasn't for the huge deflection, it wouldn't have gone in. But that's the difference between, you know, we have John McGinn, who will shoot from 30, 40, 50 yards. He doesn't care. He'll pick up the ball and shoot. But I believe, you know, you looked at Bournemouth's front line yesterday and they had three players who could pick up the ball and shoot from anywhere. And I don't believe we've got the same. But that was the real shame about, you know, the first 20 minutes going into our first Premier League game at home in 3 years. And it got ruined straight away.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of you touched upon Tyrone Mings there, obviously got in team of the week. Some of the Bournemouth fans on the train were basically saying that it looked like his good friend Callum Wilson was on a bit of a wind-up job. Do you think that played a part in the way that Mings performed? I mean, I don't think he performed badly by any stretch, but they were saying that they could tell, certainly from where they were, is Callum Wilson was getting in his ear a little bit.
No, I could see that from the North Stand too. There was something being, you know, said, you know, they're good mates. And it's always hard coming up against your old team. But if you come up against the team who you support, you don't support them in the game. You don't. You're not friends with any of the opposition in the game. That all goes out the window. And you could see Mings yesterday. There was something up with Mings that, you know, we haven't seen a Tyrone Mings performance like that ever for Villa. And it was a shame. The one game we really wanted him to perform because of all the stick that he had from, especially TalkSport in the week. And I believe all the stick that TalkSport gave him, it wasn't true because he didn't have a bad game. There was no stretch of imagination. He had a bad game. It just wasn't a Tyrone Mings performance, you know, that we used to.
It was a bit of a strange one. I mean, I couldn't see it from where I was, but yeah, I did hear reports of that. And you touched upon Douglas Luiz's performance and Martin Crispin. We're going to go over a few fan questions later on, but we may as well get this one out of the way early because we're just about to go into the Douglas Luiz section. Now, Martin Crispin, who does our Hulk cams, he says, what are your thoughts on Douglas Luiz's performance? And this next section goes nicely onto that. So he obviously had a bit of a nightmare early on, dummying the ball, as you've alluded to, in an area where he shouldn't be doing that for the second goal. But other than that, and a couple of minor mishaps, I thought he had a really, really good game and obviously took his goal exceptionally well. Now, he's clearly in there to do a bit of a Westwood-type job, and I've seen a few Villa fans liking him to Westwood. But I think the reason why Westwood got a bit of stick from Villa fans is because sometimes you're just there and he made it look a little bit laboured and his passing wasn't dynamic yet. Douglas yesterday, he seemed to make it look effortless. It was popping it out to the left, popping it out to the right, shifting his body and such, and just a touch of flair about it, I think it's fair to say. But in the first half, I just felt our shape was a little bit all over. It's ahead of Douglas. It's almost like we had a 4-1 and then 0, and then it was like either a 4-1 or a 4-1-0-5. There was just no one close to him to pass into. There was no connect in the middle of the park. And when we lost the ball, it just meant that we were a little bit overexposed. Now, how do we combat that going forward? Is it time for a change of shape, or what do you think?
You know, we've touched upon the you know, different formations that we can play, and we'll touch upon that, you know, going forward in the podcast. But, you know, I believe Douglas Luiz really does need help. You could see in the first half, especially McGinn and Grealish, they were too far up the field. And it was almost that we were playing, at some points, three up front, you know, or maybe five up front, because McGinn and Grealish weren't looking for the ball. It wasn't the Grealish that we were used to, where Grealish picks up the ball and turns and runs at a player. And in the second half, when he did that, it really changed our shape. And Bournemouth could not cope. You know, they had played two up top. And you could see when they had to make changes, Bournemouth, because they were knackered. They were being outplayed. But in the first half, it looked like Bournemouth could have kept going forever, because Villa weren't knackering them out. We looked knackered after the first 15 minutes because Bournemouth came at us, and I think we were shocked at how much they came at us. We didn't, you know, I don't think that was part of the plans.
Yeah.
But also it wasn't part of the plans to make mistakes. But that's what happens in football. You've got to learn from your mistakes. And if we got a goal in that first half rather than the second, we would have won the game, or at least got a draw out of it. But anyway, you know, this 4-1-0-4-1 formation, I could see that as well, because you obviously had the four defenders and then you had Douglas Luiz almost stranded because he was looking round going, where do I pass this ball? There was no one offering to pass this ball to, because there was no one there. And if it wasn't for his Brazilian flair, I believe he would have kept going back. And if he did play it back, the fans, you know, some fans, especially around me as well, would moan. But the thing is, he couldn't do anything else. He's not going to run at a player, because if he runs at a player, that means he's now exposed. And I think we saw that last week where, you know, he was pushed too far up. And I think he'd been told, if you're going to play this holding midfielder role, you've got to sit there. And he did. He did in that second half. He was excellent. You know, you could see he slowed down the play so much. And I think when we're winning a game, he could be crucial, because he could slow down the game, you know, and McGinn could pick up the ball and he could then run at players. But, you know, I think going forward, we've got to help him out. We've really got to help him out.
his passing, it was just varied to left and right. There was nothing, as I say, it was really difficult in transition because, you know, you really wanted the likes of McGinn or Grealish to make it almost like an angled run. So we could play it centrally. But it just seemed that when we lost the ball, that they weren't in any hurry to get back. And that was exposing Douglas Luiz. So then when eventually the ball did break and our defender passed it into Luiz, you've got Grealish and McGinn some 30, 40 yards away from him at times. And I'm thinking, well, where's he going to go with this? He's only got the wide areas. And it's all right popping it off into the wide areas. But sometimes, you know, you can really, you know, pile the pressure on the opposition when you're looking for that centrally passed ball. And all of a sudden, as we've seen many a time, McGinn or a Grealish, they're running at their defence, you know. Talking about, as you say, we're going to talk about a possible change of shape. Heart of the Holt writer Dom Phillips did release an article in the aftermath of the Bournemouth defeat and suggested that Villa go with a 5-3-2. And I can see where he's coming from to a certain degree. Now, personally, I think a 3-5-2 would be a better way to go. Maybe Konsa to come in on the right side of defence with Mings on the left and Engels in the middle, with either Elmo or Gilbert on the right and Target on the left. As I just feel that it might be a bit better in transition, as we saw when he played for Southampton, than Taylor. But Wesley needs some support, and ideally, he needs a runner alongside him. The question being is who do we go to? Davis is just a cheaper version than him, really, essentially. And Kodjo hasn't been at it for a while. What would you say in terms of, from a shape side of things, what would you be looking to do?
I personally would go for a 3-5-2, only because, you know, as you've mentioned Konsa, but you have House, who's played next to Mings, and House was a crucial part of our defence last year. He played brilliantly when he came in the centre, and also when he had to go left back. But we transitioned him into the centre, and he played brilliant. I would go with Gilbert and Target, because I believe Target's crossing is substantially better than Taylor's, and I've seen that in pre-season. You know, he didn't get much wrong in pre-season with his crosses.
Yeah.
And I think maybe a change of, you know, just change of personnel on the pitch. It's time to give other people a chance. Obviously, I believe Elmo is playing over Gilbert because, you know, you have the Egyptian connection down that right-hand side. And I think for Trezeguet to transition into the English football, he's got to have someone with him who he trusts, who he plays with nationally, but also someone who's been playing in the English Football League for many years for different teams. I think when Trezeguet gets it, I think then it's time for a change. And I think Gilbert accepts that, because Gilbert is easily going to transition, because you can see the quality that Gilbert has to offer.
So if you're talking about a 3-5-2 system with the two defensive wing-backs, but wing-backs are good at supporting moving forward as well. Obviously, that means that there'll be no room for a Trezeguet or a Ogazi, unless you're one about playing one of them alongside of Wesley.
I personally would go with Trezeguet alongside Wesley. I believe Trezeguet is a bit more... I think he's got the same pace, you know, going forward as Ogazi, maybe a bit faster on the ball. But he's a bit more nimble on the ball. He's closer footwork. And I think we saw that this week a tiny bit. But last week we saw it a bit more, where he would send the defender the wrong way. You know, and I think I would trust Trezeguet to get the ball and go and score more than Ogazi. Not that I'm saying I don't trust Ogazi to score, but I just trust Trezeguet more.
Yeah, I mean, we saw yesterday, I don't know whether you noticed it, and particularly in the first half, where I noticed Trezeguet going very square in terms of he was central quite a bit, coming out of position. Now, I'm not sure whether Dino told him to do that, but there was a couple of times he found himself alongside of Wesley in the box, and it was very central. Now I happen to agree with you in terms of, you know, some people have suggested that El Ghazi maybe give him a go up top, but I think Trezeguet alongside of Wesley just causing a little bit of havoc would certainly work, because at the minute it just looks a little bit Wesley just looks a little bit isolated up top, wouldn't you say?
No, I agree. We saw it when we had Benteke, but the thing is, with Benteke, we had Gabby next to him, or we mm-hmm. had Andy Vyman next to him, who he could knock the ball off to. And I think that's a player that I believe, you know, we missed out on a player like that in the transfer window. You know, you look at other teams, you have Neil Morpy at Brighton, you have a Jamie Vardy type, you know, Jamie Vardy at Leicester, but also these Jamie Vardy type players are all scattered all around the Premier League. Even Sheffield United, they have, you know, Ollie McBurney, who can turn and, you know, turn at players. There's Timo Pukki at Norwich. The list goes on. Villa missed out on a chance of getting a player like that. But I believe, you know, we trust Dean Smith in what he does, you know, in who he chooses and, you know, who he wants to sign in the summer. And also, you know, in every transfer window. But, you know, going forward, I believe if we did change the formation, if we did change shape, Trezeguet, I believe, would benefit. And I believe Wesley would benefit more as well from that, because he can bring the ball and his hold-up play. And he does have quite a lot of skill, because in the first half where you get the ball and it'd be under some substantial pressure from Ake and Cook at the back, and he would hold on to the ball, and I really didn't believe he was going to come out of that position with the ball, because, you know, they're two experienced centre backs on him, and he really did hold them off, and it was really good to see, because that's the Wesley we've signed, and, you know, that's the Wesley everyone's seen on YouTube, for example.
Well, I think I think my only criticism of Wesley would be, you know, I was surprised that he didn't win too much in the air. You know, when the ball was tossed up to him, and there's also a counter argument to say, well, what do you expect him to do, even if he does win the header, because there was no one around him. But I was very surprised that for a big lad, he didn't really win too much up in the air.
No, I saw that too. It's the ball came up to him, and you know, I'm taking nothing away from Nathan Ake, because he's a Dutch international. He used to play for Chelsea, you know, and Bournemouth in the summer didn't want to get rid of him and valued him at 85 million. And that's fair enough because, you know, he's their most valuable player. And he was he was excellent yesterday. If it wasn't for him at the back post when Grealish drived in from his corner, that would have gone in. You know, that was on Engel's head. But I agree, Wesley, you know, he had a few chances with his head in the second half and he couldn't direct it with enough power towards goal. And it will come for Wesley, but the question is, when will it come?
Yeah, and I think as things stand at the moment, as we've just gone over, is playing him as a lone man, particularly at home, I just don't think it's going to work. And perhaps that's something that they're going to work on at the training ground. Let's wait and see. Now, we have to go for a short ad break, but afterwards we will be discussing the up-and-coming Everton game on Friday evening. And we will, of course, be answering some of your questions that you sent in to us. And so here's time for a quick ad, and we'll be back in a minute. Right.
As many of you will already be aware, Heart of the Holt is partnered with FansBet, the betting company where 50% of its profits is shared with fan pages like ourselves. Heart of the Holt is a not-for-profit page and we don't make any money from sign-ups. FansBet is just like any other high street betting company. The only difference being is that 50% of any losing bets that you place will be given to us to spend on fan initiatives. With this money, we were able to send dozens of underprivileged families to Villa Park last season and donate a large chunk of money to Project B6. The FansBet app is available to download on Apple or Android devices, and when registering, please select Heart of the Holt as your designated branch. Whilst we'd like our listeners who do enjoy a punt to sign up, we encourage all of you to gamble responsibly. You must be 18 years or over to register. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to part two of the podcast with me, Ryan Pitcher, and of course, Tom Hendry, who's joined me. Next up for the Villa is Everton at home on Friday Night Football. Going to be a tough task for us, as you'd probably say, perhaps along with Leicester, that Everton are the best equipped side to break the monopoly of the Big Six. Now, I do work with an Everton fan, and you know, he tells me how good they are defensively. And when you actually look at the last 13 games, including the two this season, the last 13 Premier League games, they've actually kept 9 clean sheets. Now, goal scoring appears to have been a bit of an issue throughout pre-season, and in the first couple of games, they've only netted once. Tom, how do you see this one going, and what's the key to breaking down such a resolute defensive unit?
I think that's quite a hard question to say how we're going to break it down, because we're struggling to get goals, you know, from an open play ourselves. Mm-hmm. Seeing how the game's going, I honestly, I can't call it. I'm not too confident, only no. because of obviously the last two games, and I think the players will be a bit rattled, and I think their confidence will be a bit shot. But yeah. I think they've got to remember it's only the third game of the season. You know, it's not like we're already at the end of the season and we're going down. I still don't believe we will go down. I think we'll be fine.
I think it's not the be all and end all, but I mean, obviously, in the first part, we talked about a possible change of shape. I think our biggest problem is we're not really creating too much from open play, and that concerns me. And that's the thing is so early on in the season, we don't want to be constantly finding ourselves. So I do think it's important that if we're going to switch it up a little bit, perhaps this might be the time to do it.
Yeah, I think we've got to try something different. I think we've got to go out there and work much harder to get the ball off a good side, because you know, even though we played Tottenham, I think this is a team. I think this is our first big challenge. You know, I think Everton are a good team. I think they will struggle to score against us. I do believe that, because I think we've got a good enough defence to hold them out. I think it's going to be a game of two defences. But you know, out of the two teams, I believe, you know, I would trust them to score more than us, only because of, you know, our current striker predicament. But I think a change, as we mentioned in the first part, I think a change of formation, if it does come, I think you know, it might work well, but it might not. It might, you know, it might completely fail. But I think we've got to try something different.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem being is that at the moment, we just look to, it's too obvious. You know, we've obviously got two very good players in McGinn and Grealish, and I just don't think in the wide areas it's been working for us. Trezeguet, he's got potential. I just think he looks a little bit, not starstruck, but I think he's noticing the difference between this and the Turkish league, you know, the fast pace of the Premier League. There's been a few times where he's knocked the ball past his opposite number and then gone to go round him. And to be honest, it's been easy work for the fullback, you know, just getting his body shape, you know, getting his body in front of the ball and just seeing him off, really. I think over in Turkey, he really did rely on his pace, but I think here it's just certainly a step up for him.
No, I saw it too. I think he could still rely on his pace, because I know he can get past a few fullbacks. I think what he's got to do is use his strength more. I think he's got to become stronger, because, you know, even if he does get past the fullback, I believe they will easily, as we saw yesterday, a slight knock will knock him off balance. And that's, you know, it won't be given a foul, because it's not a foul at the end of the day, unless you've got a rubbish referee, just like yesterday, where there was loads of mistakes made in the game. But, you know, I believe Trezeguet, I think he's got to become stronger. As I said, like, you know, knock it past the player, use your strength, use your pace, and then he will become a class player. And I read during the game, you know, a reporter said, you know, Villa looked too obvious. You know, the ball, Bournemouth could see where we were going to play the ball. But McGinn, yeah. I believe McGinn looked obvious, or, like too obvious too. You knew what he was going to do. You knew he was going to, you know, shove himself into the player in order to turn. But, you know, I think they could tell that. And, you know, they were easily robbing McGinn off the ball. But the McGinn they didn't know is when McGinn picked up the ball, did a little shimmy and took them on. They couldn't handle him then because they didn't know where he was going to go. I think we've got to really change up the way we play just individually to almost confuse the opposition.
Well, that's the thing. We don't look a threat in the wide areas, and that's quite scary. Is I think a lot of our opponents right now will probably be thinking, you know what? If we take McGinn out of the game, if we take Grealish out of the game, that's Villa done. Because, you know, as I say, in the wide areas, we haven't really been showing too much. Wesley, obviously, as we touched upon in the first part, he doesn't look like he's got too much support around him. And for me, that is a great concern. You know, basically taking two players out of the game could potentially nullify any threat that we have whatsoever.
No, I think I agree with that. You know, I saw Charlie Nicholas on Sky Sports in the week. He said, if McGinn and Grealish can stay fit and play to the best of their ability, I believe that he believes it will be a top 10 club. But, you know, that can only happen if we change the way we play, because at the minute it's too obvious. It's too obvious what Grealish is going to do. You know, all the team has to do is double up on Grealish and double up on McGinn. That means one of their players are out of position, but it's not out of position if they play three in the centre.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be quite scary if one of them or both of them were to get injured or suspended. I don't know where we'd turn to. Now, we have had a few questions from some of our listeners to go through, Tom. Some are more sensible than others, it does have to be said. Now, the legend Target tweeted us asking, simply, will we get some points against Everton? I mean, what do you think? Will we pick up anything?
I think we'll be lucky to pick up something, to be honest. I honestly believe that. I think we'll be lucky to get 1 point. I think we could get 1 point more than, you know, we got a chance of getting 1 point more than three. That's for sure.
I would agree with that. And it's still early on in the season, but it is scary saying something like that. Well, I think everyone came in with so much enthusiasm about this coming season, particularly what with the money spent. We shouldn't get too carried away with ourselves here, but it is going to be a tough game, put it that way. But would we be happy with a point at this moment in time? I think we'd probably say yes. Now, Thomas Curran has tweeted us asking, is there any way to stop the numpties from overreacting? I think he's referring to the Villa fan base itself, because there has been quite a big reaction after the defeat to Bournemouth. Is there any way of stopping that, or is that just the typical fan base?
I think that's a typical plastic fan, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, I saw it yesterday, walking to the ground, and I'm not taking away anything from the support, but you could see there was fans who, I saw a Villa fan not knowing where he was sitting, not know where he was going, you know, and that's, you know, some fans who haven't been for years. I don't agree with, you know, now we're back in the Prem, I'll start coming down more. Why didn't you come down the past few seasons? You know, I understand people can't make it. I understand that. I understand the money problems, but season tickets have gone up more in price now we've been in the Premier League than, you know, they have for the past few seasons. But I think what Thomas Curran is, you know, getting onto is Twitter Villa, and Twitter Villa is a very vile place.
Very toxic. Yeah, no, and I would totally agree with that. And it's funny enough, you were mentioning about the supporters. I haven't been there for years. I was chatting to a couple of people at the train station as I was waiting after the game. And, you know, a gentleman came up to me and I was chatting to him, and he was saying, you know, I haven't been down in 5 years. And I was thinking, well, you know, why are you coming back now? I mean, I'm not going to have a pop at anyone, but I do happen to agree with that. But the Twitter Villa thing is just a toxic place. I've had it myself where I've expressed an opinion. I'll talk football all day, every day to someone. But, you know, if you don't agree with it, you know, there's no need to be, you know, I've received dogs abuse from people on Twitter, and it is quite a scary place. But in terms of the overreaction, you know, yes, we should probably be concerned, because, you know, there's a few things that people might change. And obviously we have lost the opening two games, but we're not going to be, you know, it's not the be all and end all. You know, we're early on in the season. We're finding our feet. We shouldn't, you know, I can understand maybe a dozen games in, but there's no need, you know, to hit the panic button just yet, is there?
No. I watched Norwich play yesterday, and I watched Sheffield United play today. You know, Norwich, they spent £500,000 on players in the transfer window, because there was no need for them to release anyone.
Yeah.
Same with Sheffield. All they could do was improve. There was no need for them to release anyone. So these are teams who have been playing with the same team for the past few years, who have gelled as a team, who then have rightly so deserve to come up. Villa have released 12 players who are out of contract, and 12. So most of them, you know, were over 30. On 30. This isn't a Dean Smith. These aren't Dean Smith players who he wants in his team. And we brought in 12 players, you know, many of which who were down the Villa last year. And you could see the players who are down Villa last year, because they're the players who already look gelled. But they're not looking gelled with new players. And it will come. It will come. And I believe it will. And I said earlier on, when is it going to come? But that's when are we going to see Wesley, you know, score goals, and, you know, turn on a player and, you know, score a goal. But I believe in the next few games there's going to be some changes, and even if it's not changes with formation, I think we'll see changes in a scoreline and changes in the table.
Yeah, I mean, Wesley might just be one of these, you know, confidence-type players. And as soon as one goes in, you know, we may see a bucket full. Going on to the next question, David Tams, at DM Dams on Twitter, asked about the decision to drop Conor Hourihan, what with all the wasted set pieces versus Bournemouth. He says it's clear to see that Conor would have made a difference with his deliveries. As an extension to this point, David said he might be inclined to drop Grealish and put Hourihan alongside Douglas, with McGinn as our focal point centrally. Now, what do you make of that?
That is something we were actually discussing in the game. You know, we were walking to the ground, and I was walking with a mate, and he said it was quite a strange decision to drop Hourihan, especially after the week, like, you know, playing against Tottenham the way he did, and obviously how Luiz played against Tottenham. And said, you know, Douglas Luiz can create. He said this. He said Douglas Luiz will possibly create some magic, hence his goal, and he did. And also, he'll surprise a few fans, and I believe he did too. But I was quite shocked that he dropped Hourihan. But, you know, overall, you know, I turned around to my dad yesterday. We had our first corner, and I turned around and I went, "This is our first corner of the Premier League in 3 years." And that was because we didn't have one against Tottenham. And you could see the difference in deliveries. And we had more free kicks yesterday than we had against Tottenham. There was one in the first half where El Ghazi took it and he put it over the bar. And I believe if that was Hourihan, I believe that would have been a goal. And the second point about dropping Grealish, there was something also that I came away from the game and I went, I would possibly drop Grealish, because I believe Grealish has got to grow up a bit more. I believe at the minute he looks out of his depth, and that is something that was discussed with a few people that I sat with last year. You know, he looked, you know, last year he was a big fish in a little pond, and now he's a little fish in a big pond. I said that last week's podcast, and today, and after yesterday's game, it's come current again that this is a vocal point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big statement that potentially dropping, you know, Grealish. I don't know where I sit on it. I think with Hourihan, I mean, point, I think when David mentioned it on Twitter, I believe he went along the lines of Houlihan alongside Douglas. Now, I hope he doesn't mean to have two holding midfield players, because I just think we're setting off the wrong message there. We don't want to be going back to a system where we're trying to nick a 1-0. And I just think it sends out the wrong message to our opponents. If he meant in terms of, basically Douglas Luiz sitting and Houlihan being the connect player, I could probably see that. I think that would work probably more than it does with having Grealish and McGinn in there, because they're both, constantly, for the large part, looking to get forward. I'm not sure where I sit with it. Maybe it's because, us fans have a connect with Grealish in terms of, he's a Villa fan, he's captain, and, so it's a very difficult one.
No, I agree. It's a difficult one. And if Grealish plays an outstanding game next game, I think that point will go out of the window. But one player who we haven't discussed who we could bring in is Makamba. He's marvellous after all, why not give him a chance?
But surely he would be a player that would play in the Douglas role. See, I thought when we were talking about when Douglas came in, and obviously Marvellous came in as well, is he would basically be the secondary behind Douglas in that defensive midfield role. We can try certain things, but the one thing is you don't want to take too long to find a system that suits. Otherwise, you don't want to be, a dozen games in and still not have found your best team, your best shape. And that would be quite scary to me if we're 10 to a dozen games in and we're still not set on something.
No, I said this exact point coming out of the game yesterday. I've seen teams who have settled as a team. You obviously have Liverpool, who are top, European champions, best team in Europe. They have settled with their team for a couple of years now. Villa have bought Gilbert. We've bought Target, and we bought Louise as well. And I believe, in order for these players to gel as a team and gel as one, we've got to give them all a go as one. I think give them a go. If it doesn't work, go back. Go back a step. But if it works, that will be our team going forward. And, I think we've just got to give it a go, because what is there to lose this early on in the season?
I happen to agree. So I think we've both clearly come to a conclusion that it is time, although that sounds really bad after two games, it is time to change shape and mix it up a little bit. And I think we both agree that 3-5-2 is probably the best way to go. Now, on to the next question. At Jam240313, a very peculiar Twitter handle there. Why do football fans think points are worth less at the start of the season than at the end of the season? A question that has driven him crazy for years, apparently. Now, my own personal viewpoint here is, of course, it's important to get points on the board early doors. It gives you confidence, going on to the next games. But I think it's just a case of, later on in the season, you can start to realise who your rivals are for whatever position you're challenging for, whether it be trying to stay in the league or whether it be getting into the top four, whatever it may be, whatever your objective is you start understanding which games are more crucial. And also from a maths perspective is you start to realise like how many points you need to achieve that said goal. Would you say that's correct?
I agree. I believe it really does set it out. At the minute, we're in a relegation fight with Chelsea. So if that can stay that way, I'd be quite happy with Chelsea going down with Villa. I agree.
You would be happy to go down with Chelsea?
I would be happy to go down, see Chelsea go down.
I'm with you there.
No, I agree with the statement. I would rather, yesterday I came away, even if, those mistakes did happen, and they did, I would rather come away and say, mistakes have happened, that's fine, but we came away with a point, at the minute, I'm not deflated by anything, but I would rather see 1 point than 0 on the board, and especially after, you know, Norwich and Sheffield United coming up with us, and seeing Sheffield United now on 4 after they've won today, and Norwich now on 3. It's, you know,
I think we are under pressure to deliver more than the two other newly promoted teams, purely on a spend sort of basis. But I know personally, I don't even bother looking at the league table until, you know, 10 games in. I think it's a rule that I make at the start of the season. I won't get carried away. Now, we're going to have to draw things to an end, but later on in the week, we'll have Jamie Yap. We'll have his Everton preview up on the Heart of the Hope blog. And Everton's biggest independent website, The Grand Old Team, will answer some questions for us. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Tom, it's been a pleasure. I guess one last thing would be your score prediction for Friday evening. I think you've already alluded to that you think we might struggle, but surely not even you would go for a predicted defeat, would you?
I'd never predict a defeat unless we're playing, you know, unless we were going into a game with Man City. I'm always confident going into a game. I'm going to go 1-0 Villa.
You're going to go 1-0, and I'm going to go for I hate predicting, you know, draws, particularly at home against not a top six side, but I'm going to go for 1 each, and I've got to be honest, we just need something on the board, so I'd be relatively pleased with that, and I do think we need something on the board. Anyway, that's all for this week. Obviously, we will be back post-Everton to discuss that and other things at Villa Park. We do thank you for listening, and up the Villa.
I'd like to take the opportunity to thank you for listening to the Heart of the Holt podcast. And if you do have any feedback whatsoever, please tweet us at Heart of the Holt. And if you did enjoy what you listened to, please, please, please share it with fellow villains. Until next time, up the Villa.